Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, what a great week on the road we had last week. Helena Wednesday, Cutbank Thursday, Malta Friday. But great to be back in studio now because we can take your phone calls on this Monday, especially as we've got a great guest joining us once again. You guys know him all across Montana, former University of Montana constitutional law professor, former Montana statewide radio talk show host, and now senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute. He's also teaming up with the Mountain States Policy Center, our own Rob Nadelson. Rob, great to have you back on the show.
It is great to be here. I speak to you from Denver, however, in an office where the door has a sign on it which says, "Welcome to Montana." And on the sign it says, "Welcome to Montana, where 90% of households are protected by high-speed wireless devices." And has a picture of a Glock on it.
Nice. That's great. Since you're in Colorado, although you get friendly folks in there, but I was going to say, if other folks from Denver are showing up, you should say, "Welcome to Montana, now go home," or "Montana's closed," or something to that effect.
Yeah, that's been a real problem here. It's a huge influx of Californians, primarily. Unlike immigrants who come to Montana, who generally are taxed, refugees, or they're conservative, the people flooding into Colorado are far, far left. And the state is in serious decline. We can talk about that at some point if you wish.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got the whole hour blocked off if you want to join us for the whole hour, or if you just want to do the first half, we can do just the first half. But
I'm free up to 10 o'clock.
Hey, perfect. All right. Well, we'll keep you around. I know we'll have callers that will want to interact with you. Well, you're teaming up with the Mountain States Policy Center to specifically look at judicial policy. With about a minute to go before the first break, and then we'll talk more, what are you particularly looking at on judicial policy right now?
I've done a series of op-eds looking forward to the fact that in 2030, Montanans are going to have to decide whether to call another state constitutional convention. They vote on this issue every 20 years. The last two times they decided not to have a constitutional convention, but the vote was much closer the second time in 2010. And so I've got these op-eds to explain some of the problems, as well as the strengths, of the Montana Constitution so that people can go into the voting booth and even before that, start discussing this issue intelligently. There's a lot to be said about the Montana Constitution that historically you don't see in the mainstream media.
2030, that sounds like a lifetime away. That's only 4 years from now. It's 2026 already. That's crazy.
But it's going to sneak up on us. And
Some very big topics. Yeah, hold that thought. Rob Nadelson, a former professor of constitutional law at the University of Montana. We'll talk more with Rob Nadelson right after this quick break right here on Montana Talks. But, yeah, that's 4 years away. And look at the way our state constitution has been abused of late, especially. Stand by.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, great. I see we got callers already calling in, getting in line to have a chance to ask a quick question or throw a comment to Rob Nadelson here. It's always great to have Rob with us, and thankfully he'll be with us for the full hour here. Rob, before we get into, you know, just 4 years from now, Montanans could have the opportunity to update the Montana Constitution. Before we get to that, there was big breaking news over the holidays. That's when the big news always comes out that the left doesn't like. They try to bury it on a Friday. This came out on New Year's Eve. It was the afternoon of New Year's Eve, and I was like, holy cow, this is crazy, because that they broke the news on the afternoon of New Year's Eve. So there was this bogus ethics complaint against Montana's Attorney General Austin Knutson, and similar attacks on other Republican attorneys general have been waged in other states. But the ethics complaint was dismissed. And not only that, but this panel of mostly district court judges and a couple of Supreme Court justices say that basically this Montana Supreme Court appointed Democrat run panel had violated the AG's due process rights. I mean, that was huge.
Well, yeah, I think it was huge, and it's only part of the problem. I mean, there were due process problems with this procedure from day one, and I outlined some of them in the study I did in 2024 of this whole issue. You've got a disciplinary procedure that is controlled lock and stock and barrel by the Montana Supreme Court. So the Montana Supreme Court effectively controls the bringing of charges. It effectively controls the trying of the matter. It effectively controls the appeals process. And in this case, it was the alleged injured party. And so the whole procedure was really inappropriate. I thought it was very instructive that the five judges who were district court judges, as you point out, who were there to serve on the Supreme Court because of conflicts of interest, that they all voted for Austin. And I think anyone outside of the procedure who was not deeply involved and didn't have a conflict of interest would have voted the same way. One of the interesting things is that the charges against Austin Knutson centered on comments made by one of his assistants in the office, and I think maybe a few comments of his own, which were harsh and admittedly harsh, but 2 points about that. Number one, when a court stops being judicial and starts being political, it can expect to be attacked politically. That's the nature of the matter. If you want to maintain the judicial dispassionate, high, elevated position, then you better construe the law as the law is and not what you would like it to be. You're not making, if you're a judge, you're not supposed to be making policy. Second point I wanted to make regarding that is the comments made by by two of the justices themselves were at least as bad as anything that Austin or anyone in his office said. For example, it was actually a concurring opinion by Justice Sandifer in which he attacked the legislature. He spoke of, and I'll just give you a few quotes, of irresponsible rhetoric that has continued to spew forth from those intoxicated by their long-sought unitary control over the political branches of government. He goes on about the absurdity of patently false and intentionally inflammatory political talking points that reveal a far more sinister motive. He then goes on to accuse the Attorney General of the legislature of creating a smokescreen of demonstrably false allegations leveled against the judiciary in an unscrupulously calculated and coordinated partisan campaign. Here he is accusing his fellow lawyer, the Attorney General, as well as the legislature, not just of being wrong, but of bad faith, and doing it directly in a legal opinion. Justice Rice did exactly the same thing around the same time in a concurring opinion of his own. Mm. This language out of the Montana Supreme Court, as I said, is at least as bad, actually, not as least, it's worse, demonstrably worse, than anything that came out of the Attorney General's office.
Interesting.
But nobody started disciplinary procedures against those justices, and of course they didn't, because the judiciary, the Supreme Court totally controls the disciplinary process.
Rules for thee and not for me.
Being a problem with due process from the very beginning.
Yeah, rules for thee and not for me. Kind of like all of these people who are... I even saw the Montana Democrat Party over the weekend basically accused the ICE agent in Minneapolis of murder. And they said this was not a self-defense case. And as Jesse Waters, you know, pointed out in his monologue on Friday night, oh, due process for Maryland man who's, you know, an El Salvador, you know, MS-13 gang.
Right.
But no due process for the ICE agent. All right, about 1 minute to go before the break, and then I want to get to Nancy and round up our first caller after that. She's got a great question, I'm sure. The reality is, well, I guess big picture before we get into the potential of revising the Montana Constitution in 2030, the Montana Supreme Court, really, if it wasn't such a far-left mess, there wouldn't be maybe renewed calls to make some revisions to the Montana Constitution. With about 30 seconds before the break, what would you say on that front?
Yes and no. there are parts of the Montana Constitution that are defective that have nothing to do with the Supreme Court. That's the no part. The yes part is that the Supreme Court has jumped in and made policy in areas where it was specifically represented to the people when they voted on the Constitution that the court would not be involved. So you have a mix there, but the Constitution still needs to be looked at, even if the Montana Supreme Court were conducting itself perfectly.
Yeah, great response. And, of course, the abuse of the right to a clean and healthful environment, that was supposed to, the details were supposed to be divvied out by the legislature, but look at the way the courts have been intervening on a partisan basis on that front in particular. Quick break. Nancy and Roundup is first right after this, plus phone lines are open for you.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into the phone lines as we're joined by Rob Nadelson, who is teaming up with the Mountain States Policy Center to look at judicial policy in particular, and, of course, former UM constitutional law professor. We've got Nancy in Roundup first up on the phone lines. Nancy, thanks for the call. Did you have a quick question or comment?
Good morning, Rob. Good to talk with you as usual. Okay, a couple of questions here and comments. Minneapolis, another Pandora's box. This is an assault against our judicial system. I don't have to tell you that. This is planned agitation, and this Renee Good was not a protester. She was an agitator, and she instigated her own death. And I'm going to stand behind our ICE agents and our federal laws of immigration, and so is Kristi Noem. I just love that woman. She is actually sending in more ICE agents into that city, and we're going to have to stand behind this because we have instigators that are foreign right now as we speak. I found out that there's a Chinese billionaire with the last name of Singh. Him and George Soros have teamed up. They have hundreds of buses loaded with paid protesters going to different locales in our country to cause trouble. And so I'm just going to say I'm sure you agree that we have to stand with the law and order of our country. And now quickly getting to Greenland, I did some research over the weekend, and I'm excited over the possibility of that largest island in the world becoming part of the USA. But I'm going to criticize our dear president, and I love him dearly, President Trump. He's getting to be a little bit too much of a bully here. Our country always forms alliances. We do not make empires.
So you're hoping for a little more diplomacy on the Greenland front, but you're excited about it nonetheless. Okay, Nancy, thanks for the call. Coming back to this judicial topic here, yeah, some great points here, Rob, by Nancy, especially talking about the, you know, how they're using the judicial system to undermine the very notion of law and order. Your thoughts, Rob Nadelson?
Sure. First, I want to take the guest prerogative and say I agree with Nancy on Greenland. I think Greenland is important. It would be nice to acquire it, but Denmark is also in a lie. We need to proceed diplomatically, not in a bullying fashion. To go on regarding the demonstrations, the protests in Minneapolis and elsewhere, these are folks who are always preaching about democracy. The immigration laws are the product of the democratic process. They were enacted by Congress, and I would add predominantly Democratic Congresses. And under our system, they're supposed to be enforced. The folks who are trying to obstruct ICE agents are essentially battling against democracy and, of course, against law and order. And I agree that the way to respond against them is with overwhelming force. You know, back when I was still at the University of Montana, I was moderating a website. This is around 2010. And I noticed how the American left, which used to be liberal, had become much more hardcore, much more totalitarian. And now it seems to be turning to violence. And this is obviously a very dismaying incident. It results in tragedies like what happened to Ms. Good. But the law has to be enforced. We cannot tolerate that kind of insurrectionary behavior.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Before I get to, you know, the Montana Constitution and really the Montana Supreme Court and how they're trying to become a legislative body. Well, they in many ways have become a legislative body instead of a judicial body. Morgan in Helena sent us a message back to this story about, you know, the ethics, the bogus ethics complaint against Attorney General Austin Knutson being dismissed. So for backdrop, during the holidays, I talked about this story and I pointed out how basically this was election interference from the Democrats and the Democrats on the Montana Supreme Court. They were trying to interfere in the 2024 elections by making the AG look bad or trying to, and that's why they launched this whole and allowed this thing to go on. So Morgan and Helena says, would you ask Rob about the Montana Supreme Court justices that had to be recused from the due process violation and election interference? What consequences are possible and what are the legal mechanisms for them? Basically, could they be held accountable for violating the due process of the Attorney General throughout this whole deal?
Okay, well, the five justices who had to recuse themselves were the justices on the court at the time when the controversy blew up with the Attorney General. And I'm glad they did recuse themselves. They have not always done that in cases where they've faced conflicts of interest,
yeah,
including in this particular controversy. It's called the McLaughlin controversy, where they did not recuse themselves in two cases where they should have. In this instance, they did, and you saw the results. Neutral justices, that is to say the temporary district court judges sitting there, decided the case for Austin. This is one of the reasons why I think Montanans need to look seriously at constitutional reform. There is an institutional problem here. What I mean is there's a problem with the way things are set up. The Montana Supreme Court is simply too powerful. It's too powerful for a number of reasons, but those reasons need to be addressed. It needs to be an almost purely appellate bench. The judicial discipline needs to be put in an independent body. Obviously, if a lawyer acts up in the judge's courtroom, the judge certainly has and should have the power to respond. But for allegedly bad conduct coming outside the courtroom, that should be handled by an independent agency, not by the Montana Supreme Court. We need to look at other ways to reduce the outsized effect of the Montana Supreme Court on the judicial system. And again, there's lots of precedents from other states, and very few states that grant to their highest court the kind of imperial power that the Montana Supreme Court enjoys.
One quick side note, we had a listener in Billings, Barb, say, hey, remind the listeners what ICE stands for. And I don't know if it was a question or if Barb was making a point, because it could make a really good point here. ICE stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They're just enforcing the laws that are already on the books. So, Barb, thanks for that reminder. Because, yeah, there might be some people wondering or maybe need a reminder out there. Rob Nadelson, that ties in right with, you know, 2030, how Montana voters could have an opportunity to basically go through the constitutional process for the state constitution, not the federal. And especially when it comes to the right to a clean and healthful environment. We had Judge Dan Wilson on the show recently, and he has gone in, he's read the transcripts when the drafters of Montana's Constitution back in the 1970s were talking about this very thing and other topics. And basically, you're seeing cases like these climate alarmist cases, the Held v. Montana case that's gone through our judicial system here, where you've got judges and then justices trying to play the role of legislator instead of judge or justice. And clearly the founders' intent, if that's what you want to call them, from the 1970s era Constitution said all of those details need to be held by the legislature, and yet here you have the courts forcing this climate alarmist agenda on the state government.
You know, there are several problems here that could really only be addressed through a state constitutional convention. One is that the rights themselves, the two environmental rights, is one in Article 2, one in Article 9, are poorly drafted. and they conflict with other guarantees, like the right to property in the Montana Constitution. The terms used, clean and healthful, are not terms that are judicial terms at all. I mean, they're the kind of things that ecologists determine. And so the rights themselves are vague, and they use standards that really cannot be properly adjudicated by the courts. That's point number one. Point number two ties into Judge Wilson's point, which is this. If you go through the documents pertaining to the public vote in 1972, by which the Constitution was ratified, you will find the environmental rights discussed there. Many people expressed concern about their vague language at that time. And they were assured, those doubters were assured by advocates of the Constitution, as you say, Aaron, that the decisions would be made by the legislature, not by the courts, that it would not be, in the language of the law, self-executing. However, once the Constitution was adopted, the Montana Supreme Court took advantage of its vague and contradictory language to hop in and start making legislation themselves. And by the way, this is not the only area of the Constitution where this has happened. There are also a lot of vague provisions that have afforded opportunity for the court to make legislation in the education article, Article 10. So, and there's similar vague language in the Bill of Rights, rights like the right to individual dignity that nobody knows what they mean. So that's why the Constitution needs to be revisited. There are good points of the document that can be retained, but some changes have to be made. And unfortunately, those changes are too extensive to simply rely on the amendment process.
Interesting. Well, we'll talk more about what you would like to see as far as changes. All right, we've got about 30 seconds before the break here. Robin in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Yes, I do. As far as the Constitution of the United States, before they actually make a vote, I would like to have both sides heard. I would like to actually ask Rob Nadelson to actually talk with Robert Brown in a public situation and hear both sides of it, because we can't have our Constitution touched.
Well, we're talking about the Montana Constitution here. What about the Montana Constitution? That's kind of the focus
Montana,
for today.
Yeah, but I also heard him state in there also about our regular Constitution. He brought in just real quick on the basis of the Montana Constitution, we always need upgrades, but we need to also look at both sides of everything that's going on.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. Hold that thought. Quick break.
Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Animal health officials are warning livestock producers in the United States after a confirmed case of New World screwworm was found 215 miles from the Texas border in Tamaulipas, Mexico. The parasitic pest, which can cause serious livestock injury and economic loss, was detected in a 7-year-old bovine, according to the Texas Department of Agriculture. That said, there's still no evidence the pest has established a breeding population, but producers along the border should inspect animals daily for open wounds and report suspicious cases immediately. Again, this is occurring south of the border in Mexico, but producers should be vigilant across the nation. In other headlines, agriculture policy analysts say 2026 could mark the end of the traditional 5-year U.S. Farm Bill era as lawmakers struggle to produce comprehensive legislation. The most recent Farm Bill provisions expired in 2023, and Congress has extended them annually since, leaving perennial programs in limbo. Experts say shifting political priorities and partisan divides have complicated efforts to craft a broad farm policy package that addresses commodity supports, conservation, nutrition, and rural development. Without a full farm bill, many programs are funded through short-term fixes, delaying long-term planning for producers. Advocates warn that prolonged uncertainty could impact crop insurance, disaster assistance, and trade programs. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana, statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Rob Nadelson, former UM constitutional law professor. He's now focusing on judicial policy for the Mountain States Policy Center and, of course, continues to serve as a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence for the Independence Institute as well. Let's see, Rob, before we get back to, you know, the Montana Constitution and what would be some potential changes that Montanans could or would look to make if they moved forward with that concept here in 2030, you know, especially given the fact that, you know, a lot of people say that that 1970s era Montana Constitution, you know, it was right after the Nixon scandal, and so a lot of far left folks had taken over governments even at the state level all across the country, and so maybe it's time to clean some things up in there. But real quickly, to Robin in Kalispell, you know, she said basically, hey, she does think that there are some changes that need to be made to the Montana Constitution. We've talked at length with kind of all sides of the balanced budget debate, but she did reference that in terms of her concern about changing the U.S. Constitution, even from a balanced budget perspective. What did you want to say there?
No responsible person is calling for a constitutional convention to rewrite the U.S. Constitution. There is a movement out there called the Convention of States Movement, which proposes a convention for proposing amendments, the Convention of States for proposing amendments, and I have supported that. I don't want to get into that today, but if Robert is curious as to the reasons supporting it and the facts behind it, she can go to a website, which I moderate, called the Article 5 Information Center. It's part of the Independence Institute. Article 5, the 5 here being the Information Center. What we're talking about today, however, is a constitutional convention, but at the state level. And this is this will be voted on. It's automatic. It's not a matter of having to get it on the ballot. The current constitution provides for it. And Montanans have to decide whether to authorize another constitutional convention. The problem with the current constitution, it has good points, but it is riddled with poorly drafted language. And as you suggest, Aaron, with it made policy choices that have not turned out too well or that may no longer serve Montanans' interests. And so under the circumstances, a rewrite is necessary because the changes we need to make are too expensive to use the amendment process. One thing I should reassure people about, though, is that a state constitutional convention will be limited to only proposing a new state constitution. It has no other power. And in fact, the state Supreme Court has already decided that. So that's already existing law. So if a convention is called, then the people will vote for the delegates, and the delegates will either propose amendments or they'll propose a new document, and the people will get a right to vote on it. As to what the changes might be, we can talk about that if you like as well.
Yeah, definitely want to get to that. Let me sneak on another caller first. We've got Kyle in Kyla listening to KJJR. Kyle, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Thanks. Well, first of all, I agree with you on the Montana State Constitution needs to be revamped. But what I called about was this. We would all agree that President Trump is probably, for sure, privy to a lot more security and threat analysis than we can conceive of. So if you're thinking of the world kind of like a chessboard, and you knew that war with China and or Russia was inevitable, what would you do? You would take over, at one point, you would take over Venezuela to be able to cut some of the oil supply off from China to get it to the United States. You would start dealing with the cartels that are allied with China getting drugs into the country to be able to actually declare war on them in Mexico. You would look at Greenland from a strategic standpoint. You would take and probably look at the Panama Canal next, and or
which he did first thing, right, already, yeah.
Correct. Well, and if that's potential, you would add to the military budget by 50%, which he just did, right? The military, because it's coming. Whether we like it or not, China is gearing up for war. And I also think you're going to have to, at some point, look at Cuba, because they're too close and they're too allied with Russia. And I think that if you're thinking of this from a perspective of maybe a way to prevent war is to strategically set yourself up so that.
So that's why he's got to. So just to summarize, Kyle, you're saying, look, if President Trump's getting a little too tough than your typical standard diplomacy, this is why. I think is probably a good way to summarize it there. Kyle, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Apologize to keep it somewhat short in the interest of time. Plus, I know more folks will want to call in as well. 406-294-0970. Yeah, of course, all these things Trump is doing or may be doing, Rob, not necessarily because he thinks a war is inevitable, but all of these things are also peace through strength to prevent war. I mean, look at what's going on in Iran right now. Anything else you want to say on that front before we get back to the Montana Constitution?
No, I'm not an expert on international affairs, and I'm not here to talk about them because I wouldn't purport to be one. I generally, as a citizen, I generally support President Trump's foreign policy. I think both in his first term and his second term, thus far, it's been the best part of his presidency. I did agree with the caller from Rob, however, that I thought that the language, the public language regarding Greenland was a little over the top. But I recognize the strategic importance of Greenland.
Yeah. Back to the Montana Constitution. What are some other aspects of the Montana Constitution that you think if voters decide they want to make an update on, that they should look at making an update on? Because, isn't it kind of interesting how the leftist majority on the Montana Supreme Court, they've even overturned the people's vote. The people, according to the Montana Constitution, are able to amend the Montana Constitution. But if the people amend the Constitution in a way that the leftist Supreme Court justices don't like, they will throw it out altogether. Anyway, your thoughts.
Okay, so let's start with that one. The language that the court uses to throw out amendments it doesn't like was never designed to give the judges power to review the content of amendments. They simply seized that power. Under the circumstances, though, that language is going to have to be revised. It's going to have to be revised to say if the people choose to approve none of the businesses of the court, what its content is, so long as it doesn't constitution. So that certainly needs to be changed. To get a little wonky here, there are provisions all through the education article, Article 10, which are poorly drafted. The Montana Supreme Court has basically said that the Board of Regents of state law, that the Board of Regents can thumb its nose at the legislature with respect to campus governance. I don't think that's what the Montana Constitution was intended to say, but there's enough vague language in there to give the Supreme Court cover in their decision. So there are phrases in Article 10 pertaining to university governance generally that are vague and need to be revised. Same thing is true of governance of public education, K through 12 education. It's unclear where the responsibilities and where the powers of the local school trustees begin and end, where the powers of the Board of Education, State Board of Education, begin and end, and where the powers of the State Board of Public Education begin and end. The Constitution is simply vague on this. Old timers may remember that there was a big kerfuffle about 25 years ago in Missoula because Missoula imported the police from out of state to deal with the Hells Angels. And that was a violation of the state constitution, but the city of Missoula didn't know that because the language in the state constitution was too vague. And so that's certainly a part of the constitution that needs to be tidied up. And there are other parts of the Bill of Rights that need to be clarified, like what really is the right to individual dignity, and what, or the right to earn life's basic necessities. What's a basic necessity? What's that mean? We may want to continue those rights, but they've got to be clarified. Otherwise, we're just going to have the courts making policy for us.
Well, what is the right to fish and hunt? I mean, we've got a lot of restrictions on our rights to fish and hunt, but yet it's pretty vague about the right to fish and hunt in the Montana Constitution as well.
Well, yeah, that was added to the Constitution later, and my recollection is it uses one of these judicial standards. I could be wrong about this. I don't have it in my mind.
Hold that thought. We've got to take a quick break. Hold that thought. Rob Nadelson will come back to you right after this 2-minute break. Stand by.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, so maybe a quick recap here before we wrap up the hour and get more thoughts here from Rob Nadelson. I was scribbling some notes, but if I took notes correctly here, Rob, some of the reforms you're talking about voters could look at making with a new constitutional process for the Montana state constitution. Oh, let's see. And then now my handwriting is so bad, I don't even know if I'll be able to read it here.
Cleaning up the education article.
Cleaning
up the
education article
is one. Dealing with the environmental rights. Another one we haven't mentioned is putting some more controls on taxes and spending in the Constitution. The 1889 Constitution had such controls. One of the reasons property taxes are such a hot issue right now is that the current Constitution doesn't have control on it. You also ask about the right to hunt. I'm looking at it now. That actually was approved by constitutional amendment in 2004. I believe it was drafted by Gary Marvin. And the language of that is not too bad. There are some questions about where the right to hunt ends and where state regulation begins. So they could be cleaned up, but that's not one of the major problems in the Constitution. There are other provisions in the Constitution which talk about judges applying what's called a strict scrutiny standard. That involves the judges getting once again into legislation and balancing, which they probably shouldn't be doing. So those are some additional areas that we might want to look at.
Yeah, I did get a message on the Montana Talks app that during the break. This one came from Ernie. And I think this ties in with the bogus ethics complaint that it's now been dismissed against the Attorney General, Austin Knutson, that we talked about earlier in the hour. He says, I want freedom of speech for every person I vote for. Although you could also argue that he maybe you could use that argument to support, partisan, identification in elections. If a candidate wants to freely associate with a political party, they should be able to do so, right? Why are we limiting their freedom of association?
The current proposal to amend the Montana Constitution to ban the labeling of judges by party is totally wrongheaded. People need that information. I mean, to me, that should be a legislative priority to allow judges to say, look, I'm running for election and I associate with a party. They don't have to do that, but they certainly should have the right to do that on the ballot.
That's right. And then, Rob, about 3 minutes left here before we run out of time. Tell us about the Mountain States Policy Center and why you wanted to team up with them, focusing in on judicial policy as well. Some folks might remember Dr. Ben Carson. The great Dr. Ben Carson was recently in Montana, and he was headlining an event for that very organization, the Mountain States Policy Center.
A lot of my work is national. It involves dealing with the U.S. Constitution and with decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, but I also enjoy working in state issues. And the Independence Institute allows me to work on national issues, but its focus on state issues is Colorado, which is fine. But I love Montana. My roots are in Montana, and I wanted to work on Montana issues. The Mountain States Policy Center gave me the opportunity to do that. It's currently covers four different states, Wyoming, Montana, Washington, and Idaho. And I'm their first kind of permanent Montana guy. So it gives me an opportunity to work on Montana issues, to come to Montana more often, to reconnect with my family and my friends in Montana, and you know, ultimately maybe at some point to move back to Montana. So that's why I linked up with Mountain States, plus the fact that it is a highly responsible and competent organization. I'm proud to be connected with them.
That's what I love about remote work. For those of us, you know, from Montana or even from parts of Montana, it gives you the ability to get back home. It gives you, you know, the ability and still do this,
right,
this big work like what you're doing all across the country. And you can escape the, I don't know if you'd escape all the marijuana clouded smoke there in Denver, given parts of Montana. And that way you were in Missoula, so you just traded one marijuana fog cloud for another. I'm just joking. But
when we moved back to Colorado, and I did that largely for professional reasons after leaving the University of Montana, it was a lot more sensible. I mean, it was a purple state, and it was a very well-run state. Unfortunately, this is something that Montanans could learn a lesson from. The decline of Colorado in the last few years under far leftist control has been precipitous, but that's a topic for a different day.
That's right. Well, and how did they do it? They took over. They focused on, you know, the left move in. They had, you know, folks moving in from California. Most of the California imports we've got now are political refugees who are like-minded folks. But Colorado, all these people from California came, and then the left started taking over. They focused on mayoral elections and local elections, and then eventually they took over the whole state. And that's a warning, a cautionary sign for Montana, because we don't want Montana to turn into what Colorado has become. Yep. Rob Nadelson, great to have you on the show. Thanks again for all your time. Greatly appreciate it.
It's great to be with you. God bless you.
And, yeah, God bless you. And hopefully one of these days you'll be back here permanently. We can it can be even easier to get you on the show.
it's on the agenda.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, yeah. We'll add that to the prayer list. Get Rob back in Montana. There you go.
Thank you, Aaron.
All right.
Thanks to all the listeners.
Yeah, thank you. I know they always enjoy having you. All right. Tomorrow, hey, we'll have open phones, anything and everything you want to talk about on the show. And then, very interesting guest talking healthcare on Wednesday. Next week, we are at the SHOT Show for pretty much the entire week. So that's going to be some great coverage for you as well.